Well, welcome to this week's debriefing of the law. I am Joel Oster, your host. Now, today I'm going to do things a little bit different than normal. Today I am interviewing Alyssa Rushton. Now, first of all, it is time to be jealous. She will be engaging in this interview looking at the beaches in Maui. Yeah, it sucks to be the rest of us, but nonetheless, I interviewed her because, well, quite frankly, we are in the middle of a plague, a pandemic. We are at home. We are bored. We are looking for things to do. And some of us have this thought of, you know what? I'm going to be industrious. I'm going to make the most of this. I assume we've all seen that meme. It says, Sir Isaac Newton invented calculus during the plague of London. What are you doing? What are we doing? Are we being successful, taking advantage of this time? And so today I am airing this interview with Alyssa Rushton as she talks about how we can maximize this time during the pandemic to achieve our greatest potential. That being said, I did notice after I interviewed her that she had a lot of great quips. So to give you a little bit of a teaser on some of her great sayings, I'm going to play this montage as an introduction. Here you go.
I'm a near-death survivor. I actually died from a drug overdose. People feel like they have to get lit and check out with drugs and alcohol. And I want to show people how they can actually activate the light within themselves so that they don't check out. But it's not necessarily about having the business. It's about the lessons that you learn on the way to the $1 million. Then you move into an empowered stage and you say to yourself, nothing tastes as good as healthy feels. I often say that you can have it all, you just can't have it all at once. You're a radio, you are a radio transmitter, you're sending frequency all day long. Fear is a great motivator, and we know that. And so I think the question is how long will we let ourselves stay in that fear? As you know, I'm writing a book, it's called Get Lit From Within. My soul's big purpose is to help 1 billion people wake up to their true purpose here on the planet.
I hope that gives you a little bit of glimpse about what this interview will entail. After the interview, I'm going to highly recommend you stay for after the interview because during our conversation, we had a lot of fun outtakes, and in one of the outtakes, we talked about the great benefit of eating donuts on Sunday morning, and so you will want to stay tuned for after the interview, where Alyssa and I will talk about donuts in Portland, Oregon. All right, without further ado, here is the interview. All right, this week, my guest is Alyssa Rushton. She is coming from the great, perfect state of Hawaii. Alyssa, thank you for being on today.
Hey, thanks for having me here, Joel. I really appreciate it.
Now, Alyssa, just for introductory matters, I want to introduce you. You have a presence on the internet for your business. You are a business strategist, and you said you're an intuitive soul and business strategist. Now, I got to tell you, your bio is just, it fascinates me. So I'm going to have to ask you to unpack this as we go. What do you mean intuitive soul?
Intuitive soul. So first off, I believe everybody has a body and a soul, and many business owners, they also have a soul of their business as well. So I'm an intuitive that helps you read energy, and I help you read the energy of what your soul really wants to do while you're here on the planet. And for business owners, I help you read the energy of your business and what's going on within your business. What's holding you back, what can propel you forward. I oftentimes take a look at projects for businesses and see where the energy really lights up so that they can see the direction that's the most profitable and quickest to market. So those are some of the things that I do with my intuitive gifts.
Now, the reason why I focused on that phrase, because I went to your Instagram site and checked out some of your stuff. And in one of your videos, you said the phrase, soul, big work. And I got to tell you, that phrase really rung true to me. That hit home. So I'm hoping before we get done with this interview, you can unpack what that phrase means, because I'm telling you, I loved it. I think we all have a mission, a ministry, a purpose. But nonetheless, we'll get there eventually. You are a motivational speaker, That is not a shock to me. I talked to you a couple of times, and you motivate me every time we talk. So that is extremely easy to see. You're very good at that. You probably motivate everyone you talk to. Is that just your natural personality?
Yeah, I think I got that from my dad. My dad really is that person when you talk to, you just feel motivated. And that was my grandpa too. So I think it's just in the DNA.
It was a Barnabas is an encourager. And so that's, I've always wanted to be an encourager. And I like that about your personality. You Reality by Design. These are some of the programs you're working on. Reality by Design, Get Lit from Within and Manifest More Money and Miracles. And then your book, Get Lit from Within, is due to hit bookstores in March of 2021. Who came up with that title, Get Lit from Within? I like that title.
Thank you. Actually, my editor and I came up with that title, and it's a play on words because everyone's getting lit with the drugs and alcohol. And as you may know, if you've heard my story, I'm a near-death survivor. I actually died from a drug overdose, not narcotic, but it was all the prescription drugs that I had been prescribed because I had a really big illness situation going on. But what I find is that a lot of people feel like they have to get lit and check out with drugs and alcohol. And I want to show people how they can actually activate the light within themselves so that they don't check out with food, drugs, or alcohol, so that they can feel so amazing in their presence and so on fire with their purpose in life that nothing stops them from doing what they're really here to do, their big soul's mission.
Now, I want to get there and find out what you mean by that. I want to unpack it. But first, for our listeners, I want to just kind of set the scene on where you are. You are where right now, as you are sitting, you're in Maui, right?
It's true. I do live in Maui. And actually, I just moved here. I was over on the Big Island for about 5 years.
Oh, that is my dream. I had to be in Maui or Florida. I'm from Kansas, and you lived in Kansas City for a while, and now you are in Maui. That's quite the move up. I'm telling you, you hit it. And so how is it living in Hawaii as compared to Kansas City?
Well, first off, I have to say that Kansas was one of my favorite places to live. It's so easy to live there. Right. The people are amazing. I always had the best neighbors, and I actually loved all four seasons. So I loved Kansas, and my soul, my spirit was calling me to go to Hawaii, and I had never been there, and I didn't know why I was being called to go. So, you know, I just started visioning myself being in Maui. And, you know, part of what I teach is if you vision something enough, your life will arrange itself so that that happens for you. And here I am today in Maui.
So can you see the beach from where you are?
I actually can.
Oh, see, that is nice. I have a slightly different view. I am in my studio, which, of course, is all encased by curtains and soundproofing things. And you are looking at the ocean. I got the raw end of that deal. But you are in Maui. I remember being in Maui several years ago now. And the person who took me to the hotel I was staying at was complaining that day because it was 87 degrees. He said, oh, this is so oppressive. What, really? 87 degrees is oppressive? Is that how spoiled you guys have gotten there in Hawaii?
Well, here's actually what I find. I find that there are certain people that will find excuses to complain about absolutely everything.
Okay, that's a good point.
Right. And right. So whether you live in Hawaii or whether you live in Kansas City, I just find that there's people that will look for reasons to complain. And then there are people like myself who will get up every day and go outside and look at the ocean and look at the mountains and just celebrate the absolute awe-striking beauty that's available really no matter where you are. You know, I was in Kansas and it was awe-striking beauty there. It was just different beauty. So I don't know that we're spoiled. I think people let themselves get to that point.
That is true. No matter where you are, you probably can see the good and probably can see the bad no matter where you live. I woke up this morning at 6:30 and the sunrise was perfect. I had to walk down to where the houses were not obstructing it to see the sunrise. It probably is not the same effect that you saw this morning in Maui, but nonetheless, hey, the sunrise is the sunrise. It's going to be beautiful no matter where you are. Well, Alyssa, this sounds like a cliche, but I'm going to say it anyways. We are living in unprecedented times. I mean, I know we've heard it. We're several months into this, you know, at least 4 to 6 weeks in the lockdown, and everyone's talking about these are unprecedented times. And that's why I wanted you to have on this program today to kind of talk about how do we approach this pandemic. Just take it from there.
First of all, I love this question, and definitely we are in unprecedented times within our lifetime. However, we are not in unprecedented times within the scope of humanity and how long we have lived here on the planet.
That's a good point. What do you mean by that?
Well, let me share with you. So if you back up and look at the last 1,000 years we've lived on the planet here as human beings alone, we've had several times in which we've had to change our global worldview about something that's going on. To take you back to the most recent global worldview changes, you had a time when about 500 years ago when we thought that the world was flat, you see, and then a bunch of people said, no, the world's not flat. No, we're not the center of the universe. This is how it was laid out. And there was fighting, there was jailing, there was all sorts of riots.
Right.
And really the whole world went into this upheaval in order to create this new worldview. Also at the same time, Martin Luther was breaking away from the church because the church was saying, hey, you know, you're responsible if you sin, you're responsible for that thunderstorm that came down.
Right.
And, or if it's beautiful weather, you're responsible for that. So Martin Luther was breaking away from this old structure. So there's all this war that had to happen for these foundational pieces.
A major shift.
Major shifts, right? To break apart, break free, so that we could create a new worldview. Now, here's the most important thing you're probably going to hear this week. Right now, we are having all of these circumstances set up for ourselves once again so that we can break down some of these global worldviews that, quite frankly, just like the flat earth concept, weren't true and it wasn't real, but we thought that it was.
So you are talking about opportunities. And so it looks like, yeah, this is a major shift in how we viewed the world and our place in the world. But whenever there is a shift, there is opportunity to recalibrate your thinking, the possibilities. How is this a how would you define this opportunity?
Love this. I see it as a process. I've been through this process personally myself. And the first piece of the process is the awakening process. It's where everybody's at right now, where they're waking up and they're saying, gosh, is my life really on track? Am I really earning money in the way that I want to? Is it right for me to be just trying to kill it in business? Meanwhile, my family is suffering or my health is suffering. They're having to step back from the ways they've been doing business and take a look at how can I do things differently? So again, the first step is awakening to your actual circumstances and taking a good, honest look at what's going on.
Now, you mentioned business, but also does this apply beyond business? I mean, is this an opportunity to rethink every aspect of one's life?
Boy, if you're not, I think you're missing an opportunity. This really is that chance. You're seeing it right now play out. People are having to relook at their relationships with their kids, how their kids are being educated, how they're working with their spouses. We are being called to look at every piece of our foundation, our education system, our financial system, our health system, how we treat the planet, so many of our foundations we're being asked to look at. I personally think we're also being asked to look at how we are as a soul and person. I don't know about you, but when I came into the world, one of my first thoughts was that it was really important to be successful. And I had this idea of what success was. And one of the things I think is breaking down is that people are going to redefine what success really means. People are going to realize that, you know, when I had my near-death experience, right, one of the things I realized when I died is, oh, you don't get to take anything with you, in fact.
There are no U-Hauls behind hearses. Is that how the saying goes?
Exactly. And so in those moments of being dead, I realized the only real thing that matters is the impact that you make here and the lessons that you learn that actually are called soul lessons, and they go with you when you leave, and you actually bring your consciousness with you when you leave your body. So in this case, on the planet right now, we have an extraordinary opportunity not only to do what we did about 500 years ago, to reset our global worldview, but to reset our internal worldview as well. And it's a very powerful time. I personally am super excited about how this could potentially go.
Now, how potentially could it go? I'm curious, because my mind is racing as to all these different possibilities. You're talking about business in one hand. And so I taught live classes, and my live class, you know, calendar pretty much got freed up because now everyone wants things online. Hey, this is a time to recalibrate and come up with all kinds of new online classes. You know, my son went to college a couple of years ago, and I was kind of bummed, thinking, oh my goodness, I kind of missed out on that phase in life. Well, guess what? I get it again, because now my son is, everyone's at home. We're lifting weights and you know, connecting on a daily basis, unlike we have been able to do the last 2 years. So what do you mean by that?
By which? By recalibrating your soul level?
Yeah. What do you mean by recalibrating your soul?
Okay. So what I mean by recalibrating your soul is that this is a time when we can really choose to see if the behaviors and ways we were showing up in the world are actually for our own good. To give you an example from my life, there was a time when I was really, really sick. I was working for corporate, and I was working about 80 hours a week. I was living off of McDonald's and a bottle of red wine and two packs of cigarettes a day. And this is just how I live. By the way, my dad was a 4-pack-a-day smoker, so I thought I was doing really good.
He was a
2-bottle-of-wine-a-day guy. I was doing really good. I felt like I was healthy here.
Hey, it's all about perspective.
It is. And so there came a point, though, after I got sick, after I had my near-death experience and woke up from being dead for just a little bit, you know, not too long, just enough, that I got
just
to
a
see,
little dead.
just a little bit. Not too long. I got to see, okay, are these things that I've been doing for so long and got programmed really into by my parents, is that serving me? Is that working? Do I want to clean up my health? Do I want to get off all these medications? Do I want to change my mindset,
right, okay,
and actually overcome disease? So what I'm saying to people is they can really take a look at what's their soul here to do. You know, nobody's soul came here to dominate humanity or make billions of dollars. It's the lessons that you learn in doing the action.
What do you mean by that?
So, for example, in business, I always talk to my business coaching clients about this. You have a business for a reason, but it's not necessarily about having the business. It's about the lessons that you learn on the way to the $1 million. You learn very different lessons on the way to your $100,000 than you do to $1 million. And to $1 million, to $10 million, you learn even more lessons. So it's not necessarily about creating the number in the bank account. It's more about, what am I learning on this journey? How am I treating people? Am I being a good person as I do this work in the world? Or do I just care about the money? We're all learning these lessons. And ultimately, you know, if we died tomorrow, the money doesn't go with us. So we know that it's not about the stuff or the things. It's about what you're learning on the journey.
I do think the country song goes, money can't buy happiness, but it can buy a boat and a truck to pull it. So there are some benefits to money, but still, I get what you're saying. It's about the lessons you learn along the way. And if you, we all know people with money, and we know people without money. And my perspective is, if you were kind and generous before you got money, you're kind and generous after you get the money. And if you were a jerk and self-centered before you got the money, now you're an unbearable jerk. But nonetheless, money, I'm not sure it changes people. I guess it could change people. But I'm getting your point is, it's about the lessons you learn as you go through the process. We really don't own anything. And I get that when it comes to the house, right? It's mortgage. And even if your mortgage is paid off, well, the government is taxing it and they can take it away whenever they want to. I get that aspect. I'm a lawyer. But I thought we at least owned our bodies. So you had a real interesting take on that and being stewards of what we possess and stewards of what we own. So unpack that a little bit if you can.
So my concept is that, of course, we were all taught that you do own things. You own your house, you own your body, you own really everything, right? In the past, we even allowed ourselves to own people. Right now, we tell ourselves we own animals.
Right.
So this is a really interesting concept, and I didn't understand why I was so called to this, except for that one day I was hiking in the Maui woods and I came across this little cottage. And at the cottage, it talked about how it was from some missionaries from the 1800s who built this. And they brought in the idea of ownership. And I was like, wait, what? What? Like, hasn't ownership always been a thing?
Right.
And so what I, after doing some research, what I learned is in Hawaiian culture that they didn't actually own land or anything of the sort. It was more of a collective opportunity to work the land, to work everything as a community and stewarding things. So when you believe that you're a steward of something and then it's your goal to take really good care of it so that it can be used somehow, some way, it's a lot different than owning it. For example, if I owned a piece of land and I just said, well, I own this land, I can do whatever I want with it, I'm going to treat that land a lot differently than if I thought, gosh, I'm a steward, I really need to leave this better for the next person.
Right. That makes sense.
Same thing with your body, though. And what I think we forget about our bodies is even though, yes, our spirit inhabits our body, our body stays here and goes into the earth at some point and impacts the planet. And, you know, one of the things that we have to remember is how we're feeding and treating our bodies on a regular basis is at some point affecting things. For example, if you feed your body too much tequila, you might have a tendency to do maybe things that you wouldn't normally do. So you're impacting the planet with how you're stewarding your body.
Does this concept make sense?
That
definitely comes from a country song. I'll play that for the next podcast, but I definitely know that is a country song. Yeah, I know that makes a lot of sense. I like the idea of we are stewards of the things that we deal with, that we encounter, whether it's ownership or even not ownership. You know, our parents taught us this concept of you return things better than how you found them. And I guess that could play into all different areas of life. I mean, even borrowing someone's car to the environment that we live in.
And even to your physical body or your business, this translates. For example, I at one time had a body that I really had run off in a ditch, and I had to become a better steward of my body. And in doing so, I actually changed my body chemistry. I aged in reverse. You know, I look a lot different now than I did even 10 years ago. I dropped over 100 pounds. I lost the walker that I used to get around. And I just look a ton different. I look like the same person, just obviously without the excess weight and the pain and the dull, sallow eyes.
You had a walker?
I did, indeed.
Wow. You do have a story to tell.
It's true. But it's also with our businesses. You know, we can be a steward of our business. And really everything that we're doing, we can take a look at how can I steward this? And it really is a big mindset shift, especially if you're doing it in your business. How can I be a steward of my business? You actually do it differently than if you think of yourself as the owner.
I like that. I've even heard you are stewards of ideas. If God put an idea in your mind, He wants you to act on that idea. That's why He planted it there. And it's also on lease, so that if you don't act on it, then He might give that idea to someone else. But nonetheless, I'm not sure that's theologically correct. But I guess the point is that, yeah, when you have ideas, you can be stewards of the ideas that you have, the talents that you possess. If you're given talents, you're supposed to use those talents to the as you were given them. And so I guess that's another thing you can be a steward of. How does all this play into our, because you know what I'm really talking about here is we're all bored, right? We're at home, and so we're locked in. We want to leave this locked in state better, with a better worldview. And so how does this play into that concept of the world is aligning? We're going to see it in different ways. Try to unpack that a little bit for me.
Absolutely. So the first, going back to the first step I was talking about in creating a new worldview, is actually the awakening process. You awaken by looking around, and you awaken by going within. So the folks that are bored, you know, checking out by watching too much TV or social media is only going to keep them longer in this process.
Okay.
The more you go with internal in yourself and say, what in my life really wants to shift and change right now, write it down, meditate on it, pray about it, do whatever you do, talk to the sun. I don't really care, but going within and choosing to really see it is the first step of that. And then the second phase is making different choices that are in alignment with what you want to see for yourself. Now, this is hard for many people. This is where they feel like they're giving a lot of stuff up. And they're like, oh, I miss my TV, or oh, I miss my gluten donuts.
Right.
My voodoo donuts that we were talking about, right? Oh, I miss all these things. I learned that I had celiac disease and I couldn't ever eat gluten again. And so at first it was really difficult for me. I felt like I was giving so much up and I just felt sad and angry because I wanted to eat cookies all the day. And that was my first phase in the process. It was that anger denial phase. But once you move through that and realize that what you were doing wasn't working for you anyways, and it wasn't making you feel happy, healthy, whole, or complete, then you move into an empowered stage and you say to yourself, nothing tastes as good as healthy feels. Or you say to yourself, nothing feels as good as getting out in the morning and having sunshine. Or you say to yourself, nothing feels as amazing as having an aligned business that's doing great work for both myself, my family, and the planet. You know, you start to move into a different space with your energy. So it really is a waking up to what's not working and then making different choices and then taking different actions.
I really like that. Focus on what you actually have and the opportunities that you have. If you are no longer eating voodoo donuts, and I can't imagine my life without donuts, but let's just say that that does happen, my eyes will probably be open to all the better foods that are out there and the better, maybe how better I would feel when I would eat possibly less donuts. I have less donuts in my diet. I am joking. I probably have not had a donut here in a couple of months. That also is another result of this stay-at-home order. But nonetheless, I like that, the concept of when one door closes, another door opens. That might be too simplistic, but at least it's taking an account of, look, right now, yeah, I can't do some things, but man, what opportunities lay before me, and maybe this is the road that I should go down. And I saw on your site, again, this idea of the fork. Now, I'm a big Yogi Berra fan, and so when I saw that on your site, my thought was, when you see a fork in the road, you pick it up. But you had a different take on forks. What was your take?
What was my take on forks in the road? I'm even trying to remember.
Let me tell you what your take was. Your take was.
Would you please?
Yes. When you come to a fork, it's about aligning yourself and asking yourself, what decision? So there's two opportunities here. And you even pointed out where it's not necessarily a wrong decision, that, you know, if you could take the right or left road, but nonetheless, which one do I feel more aligned, that's more consistent with my mission, my goals, my dreams and aspirations, and then let that guide your the route you take.
Brilliantly said, Joel.
Because I read your site. I went to your site and listened to what you had to say.
But it's true. This is what I tell business owners a lot, because in business, as you know, there are so many decisions that we have, and people get what I call decision fatigue, and they struggle to make these decisions. Now, I often say that you can have it all. You just can't have it all at once.
Okay.
If you're trying to build many things. But there are certain times in a business or in your personal life where you really are faced with a choice, and you got to go within. And this is what I tell people to do. Just go within your heart. Ask your heart, when I think about making this choice, when I think about what that looks like, do you feel lit up? Do you feel excited? Do you feel light in your heart? That's God, spirit, the universe, whatever you want to call it, speaking through you, saying, hey, go this way. Right. And if you're feeling into the other choice and it feels heavy, or you feel tight or tension in your shoulders, you can actually speak to that part of your body and you can say, hey, what's going on here? Why am I feeling tight? And then you can talk through that with yourself. But usually that's a choice that won't be the best for you. That's oftentimes why it's helpful to have an intuitive help you with the process, so that you can kind of get some guidance as you move through it. Because sometimes, and I will share this, sometimes when we have the best decision before us, it can feel the most stressful, because we might be resisting it for some reason, because the conscious human mind doesn't understand this, but the soul goes, you're going to make this choice and it's going to be amazing for you, but you're actually going to go through some really hard times along the way. Right. And if we tell you all of that, you're never going to make this choice.
Okay.
So all right. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Almost like, hey, you know what? You're on a need to know basis. And right now that might kind of discourage you down the right path. And so we'll just give you a little bit of information. Hey, listen, one thing I really liked about your site is your quips. You are very quotable. And so I want to ask you about how you do your site. Do you script what you say?
You know what? I'm a public speaker by trade. That's what I do. I was a speaker at the corporation that I work for, a Fortune 500 company, and I trained people. I'm actually master certified in public speaking. I do not script ever,
wow.
Although I know, but I help clients script. I'm more of a riffer. I have two kind of things that I say. I say you're either a winger or you're a planner. I'm a winger. There's no right or wrong in it. It's just knowing what your style is. For example, a lot of my business clients, I'll help them with their videos and their online courses and stuff like that. But you have to know what your style is, and then you work with your style.
And
I'm a winger.
That amazes me, because I don't think you ever, I mean, he never stumbled. I got to tell you, my editor, he deletes a lot of ums and stuttering. Probably half the stuttering that I've done so far, you're not going to see it at the end product, because it's all going to be deleted out. I used to use a teleprompter, which that was a kind of a fun thing. I would actually script out a 2-hour class and basically just read it through a teleprompter. Now I'm more of the wing it kind of guy, but nonetheless, you have a lot of great sayings that I wrote down, like this one: vibrating out the frequency of love. That came from your site. Now that might surprise you that you said that, but you did. What do you mean by that?
That is one of my big ones.
Okay.
Okay. What do I mean by vibrating out the frequency of love? There's a research company called HeartMath, and they've been doing a ton of research on what our bodies do. And your heart is actually this huge electromagnetic organ in your body. It vibrates out. We can test it with equipment at 8 feet. It stopped at 8 feet, but that's only because the equipment fails after 8 feet. It doesn't have the capacity to measure your heart past that.
Okay.
So when you encounter people and you have that good vibe or bad vibe from them, they're vibrating out a frequency. Now, in frequency meters, we can actually test what frequency fear vibrates at: anger, frustration, depression, shame, and guilt. Okay. Shame and guilt are two of the lowest vibrating, and they feel awful. So if someone's walking down the street and they're feeling shame or guilt, you will feel it and you'll want to run the other way.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I never thought about it in terms of vibration, but you're right as far as you can sense it.
You're a radio. You are a radio transmitter. You're sending frequency all day long. So what I teach clients, especially in business, is that if they start to radiate out this frequency of love from themselves, several things will start to happen. Number one, their business will start to pick up, because of the very nature of magnetics is that people are very attracted to feeling good. They right. want to feel good.
at a
base level.
I need you in my class. I teach this class called Using Humor in Law, where we unpack how one could be funny, how you tell a joke. And my basic premise is, you know what? We are all kind of designed to like to laugh. I mean, we all do. And so what you're saying there, I need to have you on that class and kind of explain that, because you, I've been trying to communicate that for the longest time. And you said it perfectly there, people. We like that frequency. We like to operate within that frequency.
We do. And you can actually, because of mirror neurons that we all have in our brains, you're actually being a beautiful magnet, and you're attracting these amazing people into your life that you want to do business with, that pay you lots of money. And then you're also helping them increase their own vibration and love frequency because of how we mirror those mirror neurons in our brains. So you're actually acting like these little radio stations that are helping people feel better and live their lives better, just because you're holding this frequency of love and you're concentrating on sending that out. I could go on and on and on about the list of benefits of doing this work, of just holding this frequency of love. There's a lot of business benefits, but the personal benefits are really just amazing. Stuff you want in your life that just kind of pops in without you having to do a lot of work. It's really amazing. Kind of feels like you're living in a magical place all the time, but it's just because you're in a different vibration and you're in this place where the universe wants to support you really and truly.
That might be an entire show all in and of itself, because I love that concept, vibrating out the frequency of love. But let me test it from a different perspective and see what you think. This is also something I talk about in my class. So I'm just curious to see if you are going to agree with me or not, and feel free to disagree with me. But I want to come at this from the flip side. I think there is such a thing as a joy sucker. Do you know what I'm talking about when I say the term joy sucker?
100% I do.
That is a real person. It's not like Bigfoot, where you've only heard about them, no actual sightings. The joy sucker is a real person. You put them in the room, and they suck the joy right out of that room. So what is your, is there some validity to the term joy sucker?
100% there is. And really what's happening from a scientific level is that there, and an energetic level, is there are people who fill up on lower energy, and they're carrying so much low energy within themselves, which means when I say carrying low energy, they're thinking low energy thoughts. They're thinking thoughts of anger, judgment, guilt, blame, or shame. Yeah, they're thinking those thoughts, right? Whatever they are. And those joy suckers it's a very strong feeling. And here's what happens, unfortunately, is because a lot of human beings are walking around at a certain level of consciousness, but they're not as conscious to many things as they could be. It's kind of like they're walking around in fifth grade when they could really have their PhDs.
Right.
About emotions and how energy actually works, right? So in this case, that joy sucker walks into a room and maybe they have an outburst. As a human being, if you're on autopilot, your absolute tendency is you will go and match their vibration. You will match their lack of joy. It takes a lot of actual work to not match how they're being, right? Because we have mirror neurons in our brain. So your brain's like, oh, I need to go and do what they're doing.
Fascinating.
And then pretty soon the joy in the room is gone.
Yeah, I was teaching this class in Topeka, Kansas several years ago, and Wendy was there. And so during the morning session, I'm telling you what, it was just bombing. It was not going well at all. And normally you get a lot of laughter throughout the day. It's a fun environment. And this particular day, it just, nothing was working. So during our first break, I was talking to Wendy and was like, man, what's going wrong here? How come no one is enjoying this day? We then go to lunch. Same thing. No one is having a fun time after lunch. For the next hour, same kind of just drudgery. It was a blah class. Then around 2 o'clock, this guy who had been sitting in the middle of the room, dressed in a starched white shirt, dressed to the nines, got up and left. I'm telling you, Alyssa, immediately the class lit up. They were smiling, they were talking, they were laughing at the jokes. And even at the next break, Wendy said, did you notice how when that guy left, who was sitting in the middle of the room, immediately the room lit up? Yes, that guy was a joy sucker. For some reason, his presence just sucked the joy right out of that room. I hope he's not a listener to this, this show.
It is actual true thing that happens. There are people that do suck the joy, and you can feel it. Energy is palpable. We can actually see it in action under certain microscopic equipment and certain electromagnetic frequencies, right? You're looking at that on an EKG or something like that. We can see frequency. So it's a thing. We just can't see it with our human eyes. And so we don't know until that person leaves, oh my gosh, they were the one sucking the joy out of this.
Well, I know you're not a joy sucker. You bring light to every conversation. Hey, how about this part on your site, on your Instagram page? You talked about this concept where collective energy is a lot like water. And I thought that was a real fascinating insight, because you talked about how at a certain level, we can drink water that's polluted. It's not going to be the best for us, but we'll drink it. But eventually, it becomes undrinkable and probably going to kill you. And so just expand on that a little bit, if you remember that part of what did you mean by collective energy is a lot like water?
So first, let me talk about what collective energy is. If you think about everybody on the planet, we're all thinking thoughts. We think they're just in our head and they don't go anywhere. That's actually not true. We can measure on equipment that your thoughts do go someplace and they do impact things. So I want you to think about it this way. Imagine you had a glass of water in your hand and you're thinking a thought, a mean thought, towards somebody. Maybe a business colleague made you mad and you're thinking how they suck, quite frankly.
Right?
And every time you think this thought, you put one little drop of blue food dye in here.
Okay.
At first, it's not going to do a lot. And you might not think it's impacting anything. But pretty soon, the more you think this thought, your glass of water is going to turn blue.
Right.
Now, think of this on a global scale of the thoughts we're all thinking, our collective consciousness at some point roll upwards. And so we're all lending ourselves to this energy. You can actually see this. It happens in certain states. For example, in the state where my mom lives, they have a collective consciousness, and that collective consciousness says that it's legal to carry guns on your hip and you don't need a permit or anything.
Okay.
That's the collective consciousness there. In my state, in the state of Hawaii, we're a very democratic state, and that would never go over here. It's not the collective consciousness here. So your consciousness has a roll-up effect on the planet. And it's like water in the sense that it's very wavy. Energy is wavy. So it's not one static event. It happens in waves. And the more you're contributing to that wave, the more you will continue to ride it. So maybe there's a work colleague that you're not getting along with, and you're thinking these thoughts of what a jerk they are and how dare they wear that white crisp shirt and be mean and and not ever say anything, right? And you're just thinking these thoughts again and again, and that starts to amplify, and pretty soon you have an altercation with them.
If I'm hearing you right, you just call me the joy sucker. Is that what you're saying? I contributed to the suckage of joy out of that room.
Well, if you had mean thoughts towards this gentleman, maybe. But here's the really important thing is that we know thoughts impact things around the planet. There's a lot of studies in quantum physics where you split a particle apart same exact particle. You split it apart, you move it 17 miles apart from itself, and you turn the pole in one particle that was split, and the other particle at the same moment, no time delay, its poles will turn as well. And so because we know subatomic particles at this time are the smallest things that we have on the planet, your thoughts, feelings, and emotions act like subatomic particles. It's the reason why when your mom calls you, you think of your mom right before she calls. Or when your wife calls you, you pick up the phone right as the phone's ringing, because you're already aware on some level that they're calling you. And you've probably had that happen to you.
Right. Fascinating stuff. So listen, do you think this is at play at all with our current situation with the pandemic? Here's what I'm talking about. You got several different forces at play. You got the media. And what is the media telling everyone? We're going to die, right? We're going to die. You walk outside, it's going to jump on your body, and you are going to be miserable and suffer a miserable death. So we're all scared, right? Meanwhile, you have another force that's probably not doing the best job, but they're trying to instill hope in people. Say, look, it's going to be okay. There is going to be a future here. We are going to get through this. Is this, a collective energy, this polluting of the energy waves? Do you see that at work in this current situation with the coronavirus and the media?
1,000%. You see it with this. You've seen it with other things. And unfortunately, what happens is you get enough people thinking the thought and you will affect behavior, right? You get enough people thinking smoking is really healthy for them, and we'll have ads on TV like we did, in the 1940s saying this doctor recommends Marlboros, right? You get enough people thinking that thought, everybody's going to smoke cigarettes. Now in the 80s, you get enough people thinking that cigarettes are really bad for you and everybody's going to stop smoking,
right?
So here's the goal of any collective consciousness. And by the way, people in very high places are really aware of how consciousness works.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of governmental studies on consciousness. You would be amazed at what's out there. But when we can control the collective consciousness by controlling the story and saying, here's what's happening, then we can actually impact people. Now, here's something else. And I'm not going to weigh in on what I believe about the coronavirus and if wearing of the masks is right or wrong or what have you. But what I will say is this: the easiest way to control a population and to get them to do things is to get them in fear.
Right.
And so obviously that's something that's happening. And so one of the things that we just want to ask ourselves is, what are we personally tuning into? What feels true for us individually? Because the truth is that the truth is different for everybody.
Right?
Some people are going to need different things. Some people are going to need different support. So I really feel like this is a time where we are starting to disconnect from this mass consciousness. You probably have noticed that people are stopping watching as much news and they're tuning out of social media because it's too much.
I know I have, because you want positivity. You want to see a hope for the future, and I just don't get that in watching the news. And so, yeah, I think there is a disconnect, and people, our spirit is high. We want to get out there. We want to know the risk. We want to know what's at play and then make our own decision. I like what you said there about scaring people. Sometimes scaring people is a good thing. I'm just thinking of one time when my young son, Luke, we were at a parking lot at Walmart, very busy. I yanked his arm as hard as could be, really scared him. Now, why did I do that? There was a car coming. I wanted to get him out of harm's way. So sometimes that's needed. I guess it's just important to identify it so we don't stay in the situation perpetually.
Amen. Exactly. You've got to. Sometimes fear is a great motivator. And that's the thing you said. Fear is a great motivator. And we know that. And so I think the question is how long will we let ourselves stay in that fear? I personally, going back to my medical situation, I let myself stay in fear for 7 years of, oh, this medical treatment is going to get me better. Oh, it's going to fix me. Oh, I got to keep medicating myself. Until one day, the medications actually killed me. And I died for just a little bit, as you know.
Wow.
So, you know, you gotta really think about how long do you want to stay in fear. Fear is one of the lowest frequency emotions. And so at some point, we also have to remember what our truth is. And so we're just being asked, I think, at this time to come back to that individual truth, that individual sovereignty, and really shake up that worldview that, quite frankly, we haven't had a worldview shake up for about 500 years. And a big one like this, and we're due. It's time.
Well, Alyssa, there's so many things I want to go and cover with you. We're definitely going to run out of time. Hopefully I can get you on in the future to go over some of these other issues. But let me just let you give this final thought here, because I find you have an amazing story, and I want to hear more about that story. But what is Alyssa's soul's big work? What do you feel like you were put on earth to do? What is your next project? What is your next big work?
Brilliant question. Well, as you know, I'm writing a book. It's called Get Lit From Within. My soul's big purpose is to help 1 billion people wake up to their true purpose here on the planet.
I like that.
And really knowing themselves at the soul level, knowing what they're here to accomplish, and having some of the tools that I had to learn the hard way by dying, and what that climb out of that death looked like for me, what that journey was, I figured out a process that is really helpful when you're trying to unwind from any untruth in your life and then rebuild something new. So that's really my goal here, is to help people wake up to new levels of consciousness. I like to say I'm the teacher's teacher, because okay. I just, you know, I love to help people get to that next level of consciousness. And I think that's what it's really all about. We're evolving as human beings, and now's the time to evolve into even more consciousness than we've ever had before.
Well, you definitely motivated me. Thank you so much for being on. And listeners, if you want to go to her site, there are a lot of other great nuggets, like what is 3D, 4D, and 5D? And then also how GPS, whenever you take a wrong turn, what does GPS tell you to do, and how does that relate to your life? A lot of great nuggets there on her site. Alyssa, thank you so much for being on. I hope we can have you on in the future.
Thanks so much for having me, Joel. This was amazing. I really appreciate you.
I doubt you did this, because you don't look like the type, but did you ever venture out to the Voodoo Donuts?
No, you know, I can't do that, because Voodoo Donuts is amazing, world renowned, but I'm gluten intolerant, so I can't do it. But I have been there, I have seen the donuts, I just can't eat the donuts.
Well, this is a true story. I was in Portland, and it was Saturday night at 9:30. And I was with a group. And so it's like, you know, let's go get some Voodoo Donuts. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone talks about it. So we go over there. The line is the door, down 2 blocks, and then around the corner for donuts.
That's what happens in a town full of pot smokers. You need donuts at 9:30 at night.
Exactly.
It's real, real important, Joel.
That is my...
real important.
I think you're right. You know, they legalize pot, and next thing you know,
right?
Buy stock in Voodoo Donuts.
For real, it's a thing.
Yeah, I would not have believed it if I had not seen it with my own eyes. But it's a lot of donuts. And they had some pretty interesting donuts there, but I guess if you don't like a donuts. But I did have the apple fritter, because it had the word apple in it. So I'm assuming it was healthy.
Yeah, it's totally healthy. It's absolutely...
It's fruit.
Absolutely healthy. Yeah. Exactly.
It's kind of like the pact I have with God, that if I get donuts on my way to church on Sundays, there's no calories, because it's kind of like honoring the Sabbath, right? I'm going to church on Sundays. I can eat donuts calorie free. That's my take.
We all know it doesn't count.
Did
you ever know that you could pay that much for a donut? Like, really?
Donuts have gone up in price.
They really have. Like a maple bar.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a dollar thing anymore. It's really...
I know.
Yeah.
I don't know when it was, because now that I'm old, and I could say something was just a year ago, and it was like 15 years ago, right?
Right.
But it wasn't that long ago. I went to the donut store thinking it's going to be about, I'll get 3 donuts for about $1. Because I remember paying 33 cents for a donut.
3 for $1. Everybody knows this.
And it wasn't that. It was
$3.
They're like $1 minimum per donut at your normal like if you go to Krispy Kreme's, I think they're a dollar for the glaze. I'm not sure, but yeah, they're not cheap.
Don't eat that stuff. It's got crack in it.
Oh, it does. That's why it tastes so good.
It's crack coated.
It is. And so I got to admit, I'm kind of a sucker for the hot donuts now sign. And when you get a hot glazed Krispy Kreme donut, it just like oozes into your throat. It's so delicious.
Oh, I tell you, it's so bad. You know, we didn't on the Big Island, we didn't have a Krispy Kreme. And so folks would fly over on Saturday, go get like 20 dozen Krispy Kremes, fly it over on the Mokulele flight because you don't have to check your luggage. You can just carry everything on.
Okay.
And then they would sell them roadside.
Nice.
Before church. Talk about an industry right there. That's industrious.
Now I want to go to Hawaii just to experience that. I am. This also
roadside Krispy Kreme.
Oh man. See, that is, I used to tell people about the donut diet. I had a case in New Hampshire, Concord, New Hampshire. So I flew in and the hotel was right next to the airport. So I just got a little, you know, shuttle. I didn't have a car. I love donuts. And so I Googled.
I hear this.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you wouldn't.
Coming through loud and clear.
I'm just beginning. So the closest donut store was 2 miles away. So yeah, I ran to the donut store to eat my two donuts. So it was a round trip, a 4 mile run to eat two donuts. So I guess, you know, that's my donut diet. It's good for you.
I think if you're going to eat donuts, that's the way to do it. Run for sure there and back and just have the donuts. I think that should be also when people go to McDonald's, they should run there. Don't sit in your car in the drive thru. Run there.
Just run and run back.
And have your double cheeseburger and fries and then run back.
And here's why I think there might be some crack cocaine involved, because in my mind, it was worth it. I mean, the 4 mile round trip run was worth it just to have two donuts. And I'm sure other people would say that is absolute craziness.
Yes, crazy, but smart at the same time.
Exactly, because it supports. I tell people, why do you exercise so much? It supports my favorite hobby, which is eating.
Donut eating.
Yeah. When you love to eat, you better love to exercise, because you need to do one to support the other, I guess.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. We need your love to help us continue highlighting the funnier side of the law. I want to give a special shout out to our Vice President of Operations, Wendy Oster, without whom this entire operation would be an utter complete mess, our marketing team of Red Bird Solutions, and Leanne Holmberg for spreading the good word about us, Sean Wynn and 15.5 Features for making me sound way better than I actually do, and finally, Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.